and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. What to know about tomorrow's historic election? We're, of course, talking about the race for Chicago's Board of Education. Political polls can be complicated. A look at how they work and their impact on elections. If you're feeling anxious about tomorrow's election, you are certainly not alone. How to deal with election anxiety.
We have the same power as any other judge.
And even with school out tomorrow, some students will still be waking up early to serve as election judges. And now to some of today's top stories. Tomorrow is decision day for voters across the country and here in Chicago. More than 454,000 Chicagoans have already cast their ballots through early voting in person or by mail. Long voting lines were reported across the city this weekend and today, like these. Whew, look at that one, outside the polling supersite downtown. Aside from the presidential race, Chicagoans will be voting for Congress members, Cook County State's Attorney, Cook County Clerk, Circuit Court Clerk, Metropolitan Water Reclamation District Commissioners, Chicago Board of Education members, and quite a number of judicial seats. Now, if that sounds overwhelming, check out our online voter guide to read up on who's running and what these offices actually do. That's at WTTW.com/voter guide. They're like speed cameras, but for parked cars. The city is launching a Smart Streets pilot program, which will use camera technology mounted on city vehicles and buses starting next year to capture cars parked or stopped in bike or bus lanes. Once an incriminating photo is taken, it'll be reviewed by city staff, and then the owner will receive a ticket in the mail. Drivers will receive warnings only until December 4th. That's when fines will go into effect, up to $90 for parking in a bus lane and $250 for a bike lane. The pilot is intended to protect cyclists and transit riders. It'll last 2 years in downtown and surrounding areas from the lake to Ashland Avenue between North Avenue and Roosevelt Road. Producer, director, kingmaker, and Chicago native Quincy Jones is being remembered for the music and entertainment legacy he created over decades in the industry. He paid us a visit once, well, WTTW, back in 1975. Here he is walking down the hall with jazz great Chick Corea for a soundstage performance. Jones rose through the industry from the south side of Chicago, where he admitted to running with street gangs, stealing and fighting as a young kid. But he said music saved him after beginning to use a neighbor's piano. Jones would go on to work with all of the greats across the musical genres, from Frank Sinatra to Snoop Dogg to Chaka Khan. He also worked on the soundtrack to the 1978 movie The Wiz, starring a young upstart you might have heard of named Michael Jackson. Jones would later produce his album Thriller, not to mention The Color Purple, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and the 1985 charity record We Are the World. Jones was 91 years old. Up next, we get educated on tomorrow's school board election. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago voters are set to make history. For the first time ever, residents will elect members of the Chicago Board of Education, ending 30 years of complete mayoral control of the school district. Our Heather Sharone joins us now to break down the complicated election. Heather, so Chicago's the only city in Illinois that does not elect its school board members, that is, until tomorrow. How had the system been working until now?
Well, starting in 1995, the mayor had complete control of the school district. And even before that, there was a community commission that would nominate people thought to be qualified to sit on the school board. But again, the mayor would have this final say. That all changes starting tomorrow.
It is the voters who will have that say. Now, I said the election is complicated. Wasn't kidding. How's this going to work?
Well, it all changed because of legislation that was passed by the General Assembly and signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker. I should note, over the objections of then-Mayor Lori Lightfoot, but with the support of the Chicago Teachers Union. Now, that legislation divided the city into 20 districts, but only 10 people will be elected. Again, complicated.
Right.
This is part of what is going to be a hybrid transition. So even though these 10 people will take office in January, Mayor Johnson, a close ally of the CTU, will still have the ability to appoint 10 other members from the opposite side of those districts. He will also get to appoint the board president. So there will be still some level of mayoral control in Chicago of the school district, just not complete.
For the first 2 years of this,
correct.
Of this anyway. So what about the new CPS board that the mayor just appointed?
Yeah, well, they will only be in office until January when these new 10 members and the mayor's new appointments take office. Some of them may be reappointed if they live in the right geographic area of a specific school district, but it's not clear that any of them will ask to be reappointed or that the mayor will consider them. They are likely to be among the shortest tenured school board members in Chicago history.
Because whether or not they are reappointed is dependent on who gets elected in the district in
That's
which they
right.
live. So what is at stake in this election, Heather?
Well, not only will sort of the governance of the nation's fourth largest school district be at issue, I think many people will see this as a referendum on the power of the Chicago Teachers Union and Mayor Brandon Johnson and whether they have charted the right course for the school district. They have backed a slate of 10 candidates. On the other side is a group of charter advocates, the Illinois Network for Charter Schools. They have also backed a number of candidates. And many of them have been campaigning on an anti-Johnson, anti-CTU platform. It will be very interesting to see how that all shakes out in an election that is likely to be decided by just a few thousand votes at most. So if you're wavering about whether you should vote, this is a race where your vote will really count.
All right, so 10 seconds, Heather. We'll do this again in 2 years when mayoral control ends entirely. What happens then?
That's right. Well, then all 20 school district, any school district seats will be up for grabs, along with a citywide election for a brand new position school board president. They will all take office in 2027, and mayoral control will finally be Chicago history.
All right, Heather Sharon, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brandis.
And to find who is running for Board of Education in your district, check out our online voter guide. Again, you can find bios on the candidates as well as the location of your polling place tomorrow. That is at WTTW.com/voter guide. Up next, we explore what goes into political polling. If you've noticed more phone calls or texts recently from numbers you don't recognize, there's a chance it's coming from an election polling center. Recent polls say presidential candidates Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are neck and neck. But what do they actually tell us, and what impact do they have? Joining us now is Eric Nisbet, professor of policy analysis and communication at Northwestern University. Eric, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So, of course, there are a lot of polls out there. How do you distinguish from one a reliable poll from an unreliable poll?
Right. There are many different polls and pollsters out there. And I think one of the key sort of shortcuts is, do you recognize who's doing the poll? Is it coming from a major media outlet, Washington Post, ABC News, New York Times, for example, what your local major newspaper? Those polls tend to have higher quality, and you can have pretty more confidence in their methodology as representing voters' opinions accurately.
Now, over the weekend, new poll numbers about the state of Iowa came out. Now, this is a state that former President Donald Trump carried the last two elections. This time, this poll is showing that Vice President Kamala Harris is leading by about 3 points, with 47% of people being polled there, surveyed, saying they'd vote for her. What are the latest polling numbers telling us?
Well, that poll was quite a bit of a shocker and outlier. You know, Trump won Iowa by about 8 points in 2020, and other polls have him up about the same amount. If that poll is accurate, and the reason that the pollster said that there is such a shift in Kamala Harris's favor is because older white women were breaking for her, late voters were voting for her, possibly around issues of abortion or other issues important to them. The question is whether that is an outlier or possibly tracking a larger trend nationwide in terms of a gender split in this vote. Overall, we should be really looking. Iowa was not seen as a battleground state. Really, if we want to focus on where what polls are probably most predictive of who will win the election, it's those battleground states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin especially, that should be looking at.
What impact do polls have on voters? You know, can it make voters more complacent or energize them?
A little bit of both, depending on your point of view. If your candidate is way up in the polls, maybe you're apathetic. Maybe you're not going to spend time to stand in line and vote. You know, voting takes time and effort. And you think if your candidate is going to win anyways, why do you spend that time and effort? That's why often campaigns sort of don't really rely on polls that show them way ahead. They always caution their voters that this is not necessarily accurate. We need to get out the vote. At the same time, if a vote shows your candidate is behind, maybe it will energize you, right? Make sure you get to the vote and that you're heard and try to make up that deficit. So, you know, there's sort of a double-edged sword to how polls might impact voters.
The polls of 2016, of course, certainly cast a lot of doubt on the validity of polls, but do national polls tell the whole picture?
They don't, especially because we have the Electoral College, and unfortunately, in the United States, the popular vote doesn't determine who's president. Now, there is sort of a, what we call Electoral College bias, that a Democratic candidate needs to win about by 3 or 4 points nationally in the popular vote to overcome the bias against them in the Electoral College in terms of our sort of red and blue divisions. Right now, Kamala Harris is polling below that, at least if the polls are accurate, more in the 1 to 2 range. And that's why it comes down to the battleground states. That's why a lot of polls are 48-48, 50-50, 48-49. And a lot of the forecasts, it's a coin flip because it's so close both nationally as well in the battlegrounds.
Eric, how's polling changed over the years?
There's a lot more diversity in polling methods. You know, online, via text, telephone, and pollsters are using combination of the methods. It's not that a pollster only uses the telephone. Now they try to contact people by mail, telephone, and line to reach people because it's increasingly more costly, more expensive to reach people, and people are not actually answering polls. You know, the gold standard, though, still is the telephone poll. It's a probability sample to make sure that everyone has an equal chance of being included in the poll. And those are the polls that are conducted by, for example, the New York Times or Washington Post. Those polls are more expensive. They take longer to do, but you can have the confidence that those polls are the most accurate when it comes to representing voters' opinions.
And Eric, explain the margin of error, because we often see a lot of polls that say, you know, that there's a three-point margin of error. Explain that for us and why it matters, please.
Margin of error really tells you, you know, how much the results they give you can actually differ from the reality. So if I say that Kamala Harris is at 48% and Trump is at 48%, but I have a margin of error of 4%, that means those, you know, it could be anything from 44 to 52 within that range, right? So there's a wide window. So the larger the margin of error, the larger the window the true results could actually be. And so that's why you want a low margin error, because you have more confidence that the numbers that you get from the poll will accurately represent voters.
Okay. And lastly, you know, who'd you say pays attention to these polls? Is it the voters or the campaigns the most?
A little bit of both. You know, campaigns have a lot of their internal polls that never see the light of day. And they usually trust their internal polls more than the public ones. Though they have to respond to them in their communication messages. They might actually use them for fundraising, right? If a poll shows a candidate behind, you will guarantee, you know, hi, it's Kamala. Hi, it's Donald. Can you give me some money on your text, using the poll as fodder for that? In terms of voters, I think voters pay attention, but really you should pay attention to the big picture. You shouldn't pay attention to any one single poll. Look at polling averages. Look at polling trends. Rely on analysis from some of the experts at the major media networks that can give the polls in context, because that's really what you should be paying attention to.
Right. A lot for voters to think about heading into tomorrow if they haven't done it already. Eric Nisbet, Northwestern University, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this. If you're feeling a bit anxious about tomorrow's election, you are certainly not alone. A study by the American Psychological Association says that 77% of U.S. adults say the nation's future is a significant source of stress in their lives. And with polls showing a tight presidential race, as we just discussed, it appears Americans are struggling with the unpredictable outcome. Here to talk more about election anxiety and what you can do about it is Dr. Andrew Segovia-Kulik, forensic psychiatrist and chair of behavioral health at St. Anthony Hospital, Chicago. Dr. Kulik, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So what are you hearing from people? Why are folks so stressed and anxious around the election?
I think nowadays there's so much controversy because one group of people, maybe 33%, believe one thing and another third people believe something else that's completely different. So when you hear both stories, they don't make sense. And so you have groups of people that believe the exact opposite. And I think that is what increases more stress nowadays.
Do you think this presidential election is more stressful than previous ones?
I think this is. Same reasons, you know, a third of the population loves one individual and believes that that person is the most important person on the planet that created whatever. And there's another third of the population that believes the exact opposite. So having that individual come back potentially is stressful for one group and then very happy situation
for another.
Else. Exciting for another group, yeah.
Right. So Forbes Health conducted a survey of 2,000 Americans, and they found that the election is impacting the younger generation particularly, or especially. Among the generations, 66% of Gen Zers say that the election has had at least a slight negative impact on their mental health, along with 64% of millennials, 63% of folks in Generation X. Now, this all compares to 56% of baby boomers. Why do you think younger generations might be more anxious about this?
I think nowadays when you have social media, you are scrolling at all times and looking and getting dings and notifications. I think you don't mean to pay attention to things sometimes, and it comes into your face and it forces itself upon you. And I think the younger generation is looking at all that stuff and they're getting more agitated and upset. They're protesting. They're become more active. I think that's a good thing, at least for the younger generation to become more active. So on some levels, it's very good, but it can be much more stressful for them for sure.
The survey also showed a more negative impact for women's mental health, 63% compared to men at 58%. What does that tell you?
I think that women become a little bit more emotional, and I think they are more in tune with their emotions, so that I think they understand them a little bit better. So I think that could probably contribute to those numbers.
Right, and I wonder, you know, it could also be related to some of the issues that we hear a lot about along the campaign trail as well. And then there's the messaging and the languaging from candidates. Harris has referred to this race as one of the most consequential elections of our lifetime. Trump saying things like, I will protect women whether they like it or not. How does some of the rhetoric that we hear on the campaign trail impact how we feel?
The good thing is I don't think it's as bad as it was during the last election season, but it can certainly affect people. They hear things that doesn't work with how they believe life should work, and it gets kind of scary, especially if you're correct, if you're going to deal with reproductive rights and women's rights and you know, the ability to make your own determination. So I think it can be much more stressful than it should be.
How does election stress differ from the stress that we might feel anytime?
I think you're right. Life can be stressful. You have to deal with the work, with family, with illness, with whatever comes your way. And when the election comes every 4 years, it's an added stress on top of the normal stressors that we have. So the election stress, especially when you have opposing opinions, can very much make things much worse for many individuals.
And then there's election night, right? Should people tune in on election night? Because that is really sort of like the climactic part of the election season. That's really when we're biting our nails.
I don't know. You know, I kind of want to tune in. I think I'm going to tune in here and there and then pay attention for like 20 minutes and then watch a show and maybe cook dinner and then pay attention again. But for me personally, I think watching it the entire time gets a little bit too stressful and a little bit monotonous. But, you know, everybody has their own thing. Maybe it's good for them to kind of see things in real time and it can help their stress level, or they feel like it kind of helps stress levels. But I don't know. How about, what are you going
to
do?
I'm definitely going to be watching and actually excited to do it. I'm making a night of it. Because that's the thing, right? There are some folks who don't have the luxury of being able to disengage, right? Not just journalists, but, you know, people who are in politics themselves. They can't necessarily tune out. How can folks juggle with, you know, staying engaged and tuning in, but also balancing their own mental health?
I think that's what you have to do. You have to plan ahead. You have to decide what you want to do, how much time. You can decrease the number of notifications you get during the day, so maybe I don't have to have all my emails, all my texts coming in, and especially news or maybe social media notifications can be kind of stressful to have all those sounds coming in. And then I can maybe put social media to the side in the morning. For me, I like to look at it 5 to 6 a.m., and then maybe I can slow down and not look at it, because getting too much social media at the same time all day can be very stressful.
You've just named several, but what are some ways that folks can manage stress or anxiety in addition to sort of like turning off the alerts, maybe not watching CNN for hours?
Exactly. What you can do is you can increase social connectedness. You can talk to family and friends, maybe reconnect with them, spend some time with them. You can take up hobbies. I have some friends that took cooking classes or paint or, you know, just
find
exercise.
Find a way to do something that you enjoy that won't increase that anxiety.
Exactly. It can decrease
okay.
it.
It so. can decrease it. Maybe go for a walk. Dr.
Exactly.
Andrew Kulik, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Up next, how some young people are making tomorrow's election possible. But first, a look at the weather. If you've already voted in person or plan to tomorrow, you have an election judge to thank for helping make that happen. They're responsible for setting up and running the voting equipment, signing in and verifying voters' information, and certifying vote totals. Chicago has hired more than 8,000 election judges to help things go smoothly tomorrow, and many of them are students.
Like many high school students, Prosser Career Academy senior Tyquan Billups is too young to vote.
I will be turning 18 March 11th of next year. I do plan to vote. I believe voting is something that we should all do.
But he'll be at the polls all Tuesday, working as an election judge and making a little history, as officials say students this election are set to make up a record percentage of judges.
We have over 2,000 high school students that will be serving as election judges in this upcoming election, and over 300 college students serving. Together, this is almost one-fourth of our total poll worker force.
Illinois requires election judges to meet criteria, like they have to be able to speak, read, and write English, be skilled in the four fundamental rules of arithmetic, and be understanding and capable. They also have to be citizens qualified to vote, as in at least age 18. But a special section of the law creates an exemption for students who meet extra qualifications, including getting a principal's and parents' approval, making it through election judge training, and a GPA of 3.0 or higher. Cook County Deputy Clerk of Elections Edmund Michalowski says the clerk's office wants the state to ease that last requirement.
I'm not sure that I would have always qualified as a 3.0 going through high school or not. Somehow I got through law school, but I might not have always been at that level. The reality is that, you know, we don't want to discourage people participating in democracies.
Working in election is a living civics lesson for students, but also election officials need the help.
Like in many groups in government, there's an aging workforce, and to get people engaged at a younger age is important to us.
Every election authority is going to tell you that finding enough election judges is usually the number one issue they face heading into every election.
There's an added benefit to having younger judges. They're often tech savvy.
And given that our e-poll books are an iPad, given that our touch screens are very similar, they can help troubleshoot through issues in ways that are very immediate.
Election judges and other poll workers are paid, but Tyquan Billups says that's not why he does it.
Contrary to popular belief, us students, we do care. We care, we watch, we understand.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Billups says students are paying extra attention this year as Chicago residents, for the first time, will be electing members to the Board of Education. And there's no worry that public high school students will miss out on learning in the classroom. Election Day is a state holiday this year, so public schools are closed. And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 for our special Election Day coverage on Chicago Tonight. It's Election Day for voters across the country, and in Illinois, we break down what you should know ahead of results coming in. Plus, a live report from the Board of Elections with the latest on voter turnout. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.